As some of my more veteran listeners will recall, I've had the pleasure of interviewing two of the all-time great science fiction writers, Arthur C. Clarke and the wonderful Ray Bradbury. But I regret not being able to speak to Isaac Asimov because of one particular essay you wrote, which I found quite haunting. It was called The Replicator, and it was remarkably prescient, as it turns out, because Asimov was imagining a machine which could replicate anything. He cited the replicator reproducing perfectly to subatomic levels of fidelity the Mona Lisa, with every crack in the paint, with funny faded stickers on the back of the frame, even a bit of rusty wire to hang it up with. And the reproduction was so good, the replica was so good, that nobody would be able to tell it apart from the original. And he extrapolated that the replicator would replicate itself and everyone would have one and we'd all start to pig out on all the wonderful things it could do. Someone might want the Hope Diamond, another person a Ferrari. In my case, I think I'd like to have a Mona Lisa. And this has something to do with our next story. It seems odd because the story is ostensibly about the rhinoceros, and every time we talk about the rhinoceros, it's bad news. And this, oddly enough, has something to do with our next story, which is about the rhinoceros, which, as you know, are killed because their horns can be worth more than diamonds and gold. In fact, they sell at $60,000 a kilo. Now, the World Wildlife Fund says that all rhinos could be extinct in 2 decades. In the last 6 years, reported numbers of rhinos killed in South Africa have risen from 13 per year to 1,215 per year. Well, hopefully some of those rhinos tune into this little wireless program, as my next guests are the bearers of glad tidings. Thanks to technological breakthroughs and the emergence of the replicator, otherwise known as the 3D printer, rhino horns, replicas identical to the real deal, are now a possibility, and a new project to sequence the black rhino genome has just been crowdfunded. Now, joining me via Skype from San Francisco is Matthew Marcus. Matthew is the CEO and co-founder of Pembient, a biotech company that creates keratin material identical to that of actual rhino horns and uses this, together with 3D printing, to make, yes, rhino horns. And from Seattle is Charles Chuck Murray, a professor of cardiology at the University of Washington. And he's working with Pembient, attempting to sequence the black rhino genome. Welcome to you both. Matthew, yes, I'm fascinated by the 3D printing possibilities, but let's start with the genome project. Tell us about the successful crowdfunding campaign to sequence the black rhino genome.
We sought to sequence the black rhino. The black rhino is sort of a species that is comprised of several different subspecies. Some say about 8, 5 of which are still in existence, and 3 which have gone extinct. And a lot of effort has been put on the white rhino, which you mentioned earlier, the southern white rhino and the northern white rhino, which is about to go extinct. And we sought to basically replicate a lot of the research that's going on in the white rhino currently in the black rhino, because it's sort of been left to aside.
And tell me about how the science funding program, experiment.com, helped.
Yeah, experiment.com is a crowdfunding site similar to something like Kickstarter or Indiegogo, except it's basically designed to fund science experiments and enterprises. And we knew the CEO and co-founder of that company, and she was very excited about this project, and she helped us get on the site and put together a crowdfunding campaign that was ultimately very successful, raising more 104% of the goal that we set out to raise.
What magnitude of money are we discussing, Matthew?
Well, fortunately, sequencing costs have dropped very, very much over the last several years. I mean, you know, just a few decades ago, the sequencing the human genome was a $1 billion effort. Now we're talking about sequencing the black rhino, and it's going to cost maybe around $1,600.
So Ntombi is able or perhaps has the ability to be the salvation of her long deceased and threatened cousins.
That's one sort of aspect of this project that we're very interested and fascinated by. Like I mentioned earlier, the San Diego Institute for Conservation Research is looking at bringing a northern white rhino to term potentially in a southern white rhino. And so the northern white rhinos are about to go extinct, and this may be a way to sort of bring them back from the brink of extinction. With the black rhino project, we're hoping that future researchers will be able to maybe use our genome we're bringing into existence. Maybe they will be able to sequence the other black rhino subspecies and do some comparative genomics and figure out if it's possible to potentially bring some of these extinct black rhino subspecies back into existence through the existing subspecies.
Chuck, tell us, remind us exactly what a genome sequence is and what it can reveal, what it can do.
Sure. So the DNA in our inside of each of our cells gives the body its blueprint. It's a genetic code, and it's made up of four bases, as we call them, each of which is abbreviated by a letter A, T, G, or C. And we as humans have about 3 billion of these sequences that make up our genome, and they're parsed out into various chromosomes and that sort of thing. But basically, contained within this remarkable coding sequence is all the information needed to make an entire organism, because we start out with a single cell that has all of this wonderful information in it, and it unpackages itself to make a living organism.
And in this case, it can provide insights into this ancient animal's history, help identify what makes it susceptible to disease, and thus help conservation efforts.
Absolutely. I mean, we hope to learn some fundamental things, like what makes a rhino a rhino, as opposed to a hippopotamus or an elephant or a human being. And then, and more sophisticatedly, what's the difference between a black rhino and a white rhino? And then as we gain more experience, we hope to even learn more about these various subspecies that Matthew was mentioning as well.
Chuck, you are a cardiologist. How did you get involved with the rhinoceros?
So that's a funny story. My day job is a heart researcher and a stem cell guy, so I'm a physician scientist, and that's still my day job. But this is something that is I'm passionate about. This is I went to Africa better part of a decade ago and went on a photo safari and was able to see rhinos in the wild. And the more I've read about the extinction of these magnificent megafauna that we have, it seems just a crying shame that we're slaughtering these animals just to harvest their horn and use it for medicine. Clearly, since I'm a stem cell scientist, that's really where my expertise lies. Is there something, you know, the ways of the tools of science, molecular biology, stem cells, tissue engineering, things like that, that we could bring to bear to help not just tissue regeneration, which is what I'm mostly interested in, but maybe species conservation, a way to think a little more outside the box. And that's what really got me down this pathway.
And, of course, you're familiar with the whole realm because your fascination with the molecular basis for cardiovascular differentiation.
Yes, exactly. And so, to some extent, science is science and DNA is DNA. And as Matthew was mentioning, it's gotten so cheap now to sequence an organism that once we've gone through on a number of model organisms, same kinds of principles can be done at very large scale like this. So that's why it was fun to be part of this project.
And all of this goes into this biobank, this wonderful repository of information. And there's a chance, what looks like a pretty good chance, that you may be able to help bring three currently extinct black rhinos subspecies back into existence. How extraordinary.
And my job is to put on the cautious scientist hat and say that's a bit of a stretch goal today, that what we know we can do is sequence the existing rhinos' genomes. And then it will be a question of, you know, can we be clever enough to rejigger the same sequences from the extinct species to put them back into life, into bona fide living rhinos? That'll be a little further down the road.
This is Alan Earle on RN, etc., and my guests are Matthew Marcus, the CEO and co-founder of Pembient, a biotech company, and Charles Chuck Murray, Professor of Cardiology and Stem Cells Research at the University of Washington. Now, Matthew, let's go back to the magic world of 3D printing. I've suddenly been told that in China they're using 3D printing to build small apartment blocks, and we've already talked on the program about dazzling prosthetics being produced for use in human surgery. So let's now focus on this aspect of 3D printing. Tell us about how it can be applied to a rhino horn.
Sure. 3D printing is a very large umbrella under which a lot of different technologies reside. So there's 3D printing for plastics, 3D printing for cells, 3D printing for metals. And, you know, the basic principle is just having a computer control the layout or the layering of different materials into the shape of the object you want to replicate. We've done some research on how to do that with certain biomaterials in a way that basically doesn't denature them and lets them maintain their form and shape in the layering process. And that's basically what we've been doing here at the lab in IndieBio in San Francisco, is working on refining that process so that we can, in practice, replicate rhinoceros horns.
I understand that rhino horns are composed of a keratin protein.
That's correct. Keratin is really a family of fibrous proteins that give structure. It's found in nails, in hooves, in horns, and the rhino horn is, you know, primarily composed of keratins, but it also has other biomolecules and elements inside of it too.
So if a let's play a mind game here. If a rhino horn poacher had a 3D printed horn in his left hand and a real one in his right hand, he would not be able to tell the difference?
Well, yes. The goal is basically to produce something that would be called bioidentical, which means that you can look at it in a variety of scientific ways, and do different tests on it, and those tests would be match from the wild horn to the printed horn. And similarly, you know, it would also have the same sort of physical properties, which is probably what the poacher would be most familiar with as far as, you know, density, mass, and various sort of tactile sensations. So, yeah, the goal is basically to create something that is the same as the wild horn.
There are, of course, let's remind the listener, fake rhino horns flooding the market, but they're actually shaved water buffalo horns.
That's correct. There are fakes in the marketplace right now, or horns that are resold as rhinoceros horn. The danger, I think, is that these fakes are right now buffering the true demand for rhinoceros horn. And one of our worries is that as technology improves, as cell phones get sensors, your next cell phone will probably be able to scan an apple and tell you it's an apple and has this many calories and whatnot. As sort of forensic tests, like genetic tests, become cheaper and become deployed in the field, it'll be very easy to basically test your rhinoceros horn in a variety of different ways to see if it's a real horn or a fake horn. And at that time, the fakes, the water buffalo horn that currently sort of buffers the demand for rhinoceros horn, they'll be revealed as fakes and be taken out of the marketplace.
I've been looking at your website, and I'm astonished by this statement. Our goal is to replace the illegal wildlife trade, a $20 billion black market, the fourth largest after drugs, arms, and human trafficking. I find the scale of that black market unimaginable, incomprehensible.
Yes, that black market obviously goes beyond just rhinoceros horn. A rhinoceros horn may be about a $1 billion part of that, $20 billion. A lot of other animals, you know, are currently under pressure. They're used for a variety of different purposes, some in the East and some in the West. You know, that includes pangolins, which are a scaly anteater. Their scales have medicinal value. There's shark fins. There's tiger bone. There's elephant ivory. There's a rhinoceros horn. The list of species under threat, is extensive. And we think the only way to sort of get out of this extinction problem is basically to provide these materials, but provide them from a laboratory.
Chuck, the director of Save the Rhino International, has said, as we would have a sports car or a pool outside, these businessmen have a rhino horn on the hearth to show how successful they are, or they grind it up and mix it with rice wine to share with dinner guests, or even snort it. It's like, I'm so wealthy, I can grind up the rhino horn I can afford to buy. How are other loonies using rhino horns?
I'm sorry, that made me chuckle. People are using rhino. There's a long tradition in Eastern medicine for the use of rhino horn and its purported medicinal properties. I'm a practitioner of Western medicine, and I can't really speak to the validity of these kinds of claims, except to say that these are old cultural norms that have been since way before my time and will surely be here long after I'm gone.
Worry, we'll replicate you. We'll 3D print another one of you, Chuck, so you're not getting away like that.
No, I'm sorry. Maybe I'm not understanding your question. But I thought you were asking me how is it? What's the use for these aside from as a show of wealth?
I understand that uses include a hypothetical cure for cancer, a cure for hangovers, and of course the Vietnamese famously or notoriously use it as an aphrodisiac.
Yeah, it's supposed to be a male enhancement drug, something that assists in erectile dysfunction, and it's also thought to have fever-reducing or antipyretic properties as well.
Heavens above. But, of course, the aphrodisiac qualities may, in fact, simply be, based on its shape. It might be as simple-minded as that. Matthew, the demand for rhino horn is escalating incredibly, especially in Vietnam.
Yes, that's correct. Vietnam gets the lion's share of the blame for the poaching crisis, though I think a careful study of the situation would reveal that other countries are also involved in the trade, and it's not just Vietnam alone driving the demand.
Chuck, I'm going to whisper this in your ear. I'm in the market for a rhino horn. How would I buy it? How would I get onto the market?
That's a good question. The honest answer is, if you want legitimate rhino horn, I don't even know a guy. The usual thing starts out, I know a guy who. And for a rhino horn, that's far enough outside my sphere that it would take me a while. Maybe I'll bounce it back to Matthew, who's actually traveled in the Far East and has some market experience.
I take it they're not immediately available on eBay, or are they, Matthew?
Online trafficking is sort of a growing area for wildlife, for wildlife trafficking, using online tools to sell and trade wildlife. So you may be able to find it on maybe not eBay. eBay actually does a very good job of screening for words like ivory and whatnot. But, people are cunning, and they develop new lingo to describe the products, such as, I think, white or plastic is like one of the terms used sort of in the chat rooms or whatnot to sell ivory or trade ivory. So, yeah, you may be able to find it online. It would not surprise me.
Let me go back to Asimov and his replicator and his image of everyone being able to have, for example, the a perfect copy of the Mona Lisa. One could argue that rather than devaluing the original, the replications might enhance its value. And let's extrapolate from that back to the rhinoceros horn. Is there not a possibility, Matthew, that your technology may make the so-called real horns even more valuable?
Well, I think the thing is, if a replicator did exist, what really gives something value is sort of the chain of custody behind it. The certifications, like in gems, you have a certificate and you have the legal authorities that, will basically, back up your certificate claim, courts, judicial system and whatnot. So, the real value is not necessarily the object. It's in the the exchange of the object and the legal framework around that exchange. And so if you can create a wild I mean, if you have a wild rhino horn and a 3D printed horn, and there is really no legal entity to differentiate between the two or to rule in your favor or not in your favor, whether this is authentic or not authentic, then really there's no way to tell whether this is the wild product or the artificial product, and there's really no way to assign the appropriate value to it.
I don't want to be anything but enthusiastic. I think what you're attempting to do is just marvelous. But fake fur didn't stop the fur industry. Cubic zirconia didn't stop the diamond industry. So it's by no means a foregone conclusion. But it is remarkable that you're undertaking it. Chuck, once you've sequined black rhino genome, will your findings be published? Will they be available around the world for everyone to study?
Absolutely. Our goal is really not to use this for any in-house purposes exclusively. We will put these out on public databases basically as soon as we are confident in the quality of the sequencing. So within a week or two of knowing the data ourselves, this will be available to the world.
Matthew, you say that a portion of the profits will be fed back to I'm going back to the 3D printed horns. We'll go back to charities working to protect wild rhinos. And I understand that your company, Pembient, also has ambitions to bioengineer other animal products, well, from endangered creatures like tigers and elephants that are poached for their skins or body parts.
Yes, that's correct. We would like to sort of add in a sales tax, so to speak, on these products above and beyond whatever the legal sales tax is. And we would collect that from our revenue and disperse it back to groups working on anti-poverty and anti-poaching measures around these animals.
The link between terrorism and ivory poaching is so large the term blood ivory has been coined, in echo of blood diamonds, and terrorist groups like Al-Shabaab are making up to $600,000 a month from sales. Is it true, Matthew, that terrorist organizations have been involved in the rhino horn market?
Oh, that's a good question. I think the rhino horn market may be more based around greed than terrorism. I mean, obviously, a lot of countries that did have rhinos in the past and where the rhinos have been poached to extinction, a lot of those that poaching was to fund civil wars or to fund arms to fight civil wars. So it's yes, money can be diverted from the wildlife trade to conflicts, including potentially terrorism. But I'm not really sure how much of that is actually occurring in the rhino horn trade right now.
Matthew, there is a suggestion that the solution to the poaching problem is rhino farming. Some say that this is the best way to control and save the creature. Pembient is against it. Why?
Yes, we are against farming for ethical reasons. We don't believe animals should be exploited in that way. And so we also feel that farming may not scale correctly. When you're farming an animal, you're also increasing demand for its products as you sell them in the market. More people will want them. And there's a possibility that you cannot basically scale up farming quick enough to meet the demand. And so the overflow demand will basically go into the field and result in poaching. And so the nice thing about biotech, though, is that it's a technology and it's scalable. It's like manufacturing computer chips or anything else. You just, get more capacity, more capital, and you can meet that demand in sort of a continuous way. And that's why we're very excited about biotech and not so excited about farming.
Back to you, Chuck. Technology is always a two-edged sword. And while what we're talking about is great, the new technology is also providing new opportunities for the poachers with, I understand, drones now being introduced.
Yes, and this is the rub, that technology is essentially amoral in and of itself. It all depends on the intentions of the user. And these are complicated systems, and I recognize your point that there could be unintended consequences when we're working with complicated things like international economies and black markets and things like that. But to me, it seems like we have to look at how well are we doing so far with our conventional approaches to conservation. And we basically watched the white rhino go extinct, and we've lost three subspecies of the black. And I think it's time to try some other approaches.
I've suddenly got a vision, splendid Matthew. Now, we know that locals poach because there are no jobs. They're often on the verge of starvation. They do what they have to do to survive. You arrive with this job creation program, with this new technology. You employ these people to produce the horns and, you know, to transform keratin powder into facsimiles thereof. Would that be possible? Could you do this printing in a low-tech country?
Yes. I mean, we believe that there is going to be a role potentially for people in and around natural habitats to work with us in order to basically move these horns potentially into the black market, because there's already this market mechanism set up that spans from South Africa to Vietnam. And we think that, you know, the people there could play a role in basically helping us bring our horns into that black market.
Occasionally on this program, I award guests who are particularly impressive with a tiny honour. It's called the Koala Stamp Award, a koala being a small non-bear that lives in Australian eucalypts and which may down the track need your help. But thank you for what you're doing, and please accept one each koala stamps. Matthew Marcus, CEO and co-founder of the biotech company Pembiant, and his comrade-in-arms, Charles Chuck Murray, a professor of cardiology and stem cell research. Stick around now, beloved listeners, for the news, and on our next, we will explore all aspects of worrying.